Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, they've wanted to do this for years, but they never had a president that had the guts to do it, because it does take guts, believe me.
President Trump on Wednesday afternoon announcing a suspension of tariffs.
Was it the bond markets that persuaded you to reverse course?
No, I was watching the bond market. The bond market is very tricky. I was watching it, but if you look at it now, it's beautiful. The bond market right now is beautiful. But I saw last night where people were getting a little queasy. I think everything had... the big move wasn't what I did today. The big move was what I did on Liberation Day. We had Liberation Day in America. We're liberated from all of the horrible deals that were made, all of the horrible trade deals that were made.
This is Agriculture Today.
The America First Trade Policy Memorandum rightly tasked the USTR to review China's compliance with the Phase One Agreement.
Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee is Michael Crapo from Idaho, talking China's Phase One Agreement with Jamison Greer, U.S. Trade Rep.
Under the agreement, China is obligated to purchase more U.S. goods and change basic practices and laws, the so-called structural commitments. The prior administration refused to discuss whether China complied with its structural commitments. And by the way, these were commitments made in response to tariffs in President Trump's first presidency, correct?
That's right.
What is your analysis of China's compliance with the structural commitments that it made in Phase One so far?
Our assessment, Chairman, is that in the initial stages of implementing the agreement, China made significant movement to make these structural changes, whether it was with respect to agricultural rules, financial services, or IP. We found during the Biden administration there was little enforcement and little communication, and that the Chinese did not comply with this agreement in large part. I've had a call with my counterpart. I've communicated to him our feeling on this, that they have not complied with the agreement. And I think we're disappointed by this. It's not surprising, but we are certainly disappointed by that.
And now you're engaged to, again, see if we can get compliance.
We will see, right? The Chinese obviously have agency in this. It's not just a matter of U.S. policy. We, of course, welcome and we hope that foreign countries will change their practices to make sure that they're fair. And we look forward to continue to monitor that situation.
Texas Senator John Cornyn.
We've exported manufacturing to Asia and other, particularly China and other countries, that now appear to be willing to hold us hostage to those supply chains. A few years ago, we passed the Chips and Science Act. We worked with Secretary Pompeo, Secretary Ross during President Trump's first administration and later was signed by President Biden. But to bring advanced semiconductor manufacturing back on shore, because we recognized that the vulnerability that existed if there was another pandemic, there's a natural disaster, or heaven forbid, a military conflict break out in Asia, we wouldn't have access to these advanced semiconductors that run everything from your cell phone to the avionics on an F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. But China has basically held us hostage and continues to use some of these vulnerabilities to our detriment. For example, critical mineral processing. Would you speak to the vulnerability that exists as a result of China basically processing 90% of the critical minerals in the world that are essential for our daily lives?
Yes, Senator, and that figure is always one that gives me great concern, the 90% of the processing. We do have critical minerals in the United States. We have lithium here. We have other critical minerals here. And a lot of it is that China has centralized the processing of minerals, right? We have in the Western Hemisphere, in Bolivia, in Chile, we have all kinds of critical minerals, and that's in our hemisphere. But they get sent to China, they're processed, and they come here. And then if China wants to exercise economic coercion or other practices, they do have a stranglehold on these kinds of things. That's a very dangerous situation to be in. I mean, this is part of the urgency of what we're talking about. And I think as the Trump administration certainly takes action on trade, but also takes action on the environmental side and permitting and regulation, that's an area where we can actually have more of that activity here in the United States, or we can work with our trading partners to try to incentivize production there as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Yeah, so it's a big bill. Reconciliation is a legislative tool that's being used. A lot of things will be included in this. A lot of things that impact our ag producers.
Representative Tracy Mann is a member of the House Ag Committee.
The big things are border security, returning to American energy dominance, so our energy policy, but also taxes. And, you know, if Congress doesn't act, this will affect all of our ag producers, farmer, ranchers all over the Midwest, all over the country. But if Congress doesn't act on January 1, everyone will get a tax increase. So individual income tax goes up, capital gains tax goes up, corporate taxes goes up, estate tax exclusion dollar amounts go down, which is bad for ag producers. So we are working very hard to prevent tax hikes here later this year.
Mann, a member of the Kansas delegation, talks about the budget.
Here, you know, we're $36 trillion in debt as a nation. And just some context there, in 2010, we were at $13 trillion. So we've added $23 trillion to the debt just in the last 15 years. Federal budget around $6.5 trillion. Last year, we spent over $1 trillion, Tony, just on interest on the debt. So, you know, we're going to blink and be at $40 trillion, then $50 trillion. This is not sustainable. This is an existential threat to the country, and we've got to get our spending under control.
That's what's happening in Washington, D.C., but what about at the border?
Well, a lot's happening. So probably the biggest issue in the last election is the southern border, which was wide open, you know, under the previous administration. Joe Biden had a wide open southern border policy. Trump, you know, they said for years they needed Congress to act. Turns out we just needed a different president in the White House. And so you have President Trump who's come in. He's enforcing the law. Border crossings have plummeted. So they're at 96-97% less than what they were year over year under the previous administration. But we also need Congress to step in and act to codify a lot of these changes that are being made at the southern border. Also to make sure that no future president can ever open up the border like we've seen previously. I'm all for legal immigration, but this illegal process system that we've had in place makes absolutely no sense, and it's not good for the health of the country.
But not everybody understands that border and immigration are not the same as ag guest worker or H-2A programs.
Yeah, a completely separate issue. That's exactly right. That's the Department of Labor. You know, and you know, we've got to have systems in place that we can get ag workers into this country. I'm for expanding those programs. I think most people would say they've been very successful. But we all have to have, we have a working immigration system that gets the workers into our country that we need. But also, we've got to shut off the illegal immigration. Well, part of the story that's left out, Tony, is just the national security threat that this is. You know, we know of at least 400 people on the terrorist watch list that have come into the country. And these are just people we know about, much less a whole bunch of other really bad actors that are in the country, frankly, doing damage to our communities, should never have been allowed to come in. But now President Trump is doing the work he needs to do to evict convicted criminals out of the country.
And it comes full circle to something known as the SAVE Act.
Important piece of legislation, kind of tied to the open border policies, a little bit separate, though. You know, the SAVE Act just says that only United States citizens should be able to vote in federal elections, which is just common sense. You know, practically everyone in Kansas would agree that only U.S. citizens should be able to vote. Currently, it's federal law in some states, or it's law in some states, not in others. We got to have enforcement mechanisms in place to make sure that only U.S. citizens can vote in our elections. That's what the SAVE Act will do. Voted for it last term, you know, last fall. It comes up again this week. I'm optimistic that the Senate's going to move on it, but I'm going to proudly vote for and support this legislation later on today.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Last Wednesday, President Trump declared a national emergency in response to the large and persistent trade deficit that has built up in recent years.
U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer.
This deficit is driven in part by non-reciprocal tariffs, trading barriers, and other economic policies pursued by our foreign trading partners. The situation is urgent. President Trump imposed tariffs to address this emergency. And these measures are aimed squarely at achieving reciprocity and reducing our massive trade deficit to reshore production in the United States. This national emergency declaration and tariff action is the most significant change in U.S. trade policy since we allowed China to join the World Trade Organization. The American working class in particular has suffered concentrated losses from the so-called China shock and other adverse effects of past trade policy and the conditions that give rise to this massive trade deficit. You've heard some of these numbers before. The United States has lost 5 million manufacturing jobs and 90,000 factories since 1994. President Biden left with a $1.2 trillion trade deficit in goods, the largest of any country in the history of the world. The United States share of world manufacturing output declined from 2001 to last year. In the fourth quarter of 2024, U.S. manufacturing as a share of gross domestic product was the lowest it had been in 20 years. During COVID, we were unable to procure semiconductors to build our cars or materials for pharmaceuticals and personal protective equipment. During World War II, we built nearly 9,000 ships. Last year, the United States built only 3 ocean-going vessels. Our agricultural trade balance, which historically resulted in trade surpluses for our farmers, was in deficit the last 2 years of the Biden administration and likely will take some time to recover. These are all serious indicators of an economic and national security emergency, and we can't ignore it. One important driver of these negative trends has been unfair, unbalanced, and non-reciprocal trade. This includes the effect of higher tariffs imposed by other countries on the United States, the effect of non-tariff measures that promote other countries' exports and obstruct U.S. exports, and other foreign economic policies favoring overproduction and degrading America's manufacturing capacity. And the lack of reciprocity is an important driver of our global trade deficit and with particular countries. So it's common sense to focus on these indicators. For example, the European Union can sell us all the shellfish they want, but the EU bans shellfish from 48 states. The result is a trade deficit in shellfish with the EU. We only charge a 2.5% tariff on ethanol, but Brazil charges us an 18% tariff. The result? We have a large trade deficit in ethanol with Brazil. Our average tariff on agricultural goods is 5%, but India's average tariff is 39%. You understand the trend here. Our trade deficit, driven by these non-reciprocal conditions, is a manifestation of the loss of the nation's ability to make, to grow, to build. And the president recognizes the urgency of the moment. On the first day of his second term, President Trump issued a comprehensive memorandum setting out his trade policy directive. And over the past 10 weeks, he has executed on nearly all of these priorities. He has tightened tariffs on steel and aluminum. He's imposed new measures on auto and auto parts not made in the United States. And on April 2nd, the president declared the national emergency that we've discussed. And so the president has imposed a reciprocal tariff along with a global baseline tariff to achieve reciprocity with other countries and to drive the dangerous deficit down. And the present strategy is already bearing fruit. Over the past few weeks, a planned layoff for an auto production shift in Tennessee has been suspended. Another automaker is hiring additional employees and expanding overtime to increase auto production in Indiana. Companies have announced $4 trillion in new investment in the United States. Nearly 50 countries have approached me personally to discuss the president's new policy and explore how to achieve reciprocity, and they've spoken with many members of the administration. Several of these countries, such as Argentina, Vietnam, India, and Israel, have suggested that they will reduce their tariffs and non-tariff barriers in line with the president's policy. And these obviously are welcome moves. Our large and persistent trade deficit has been over 30 years in the making, and it will not be resolved overnight. But all of this is in the right direction, particularly as we start to negotiate with these countries.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Let me come from a perspective of a lot of Oklahoma farmers and ranchers and manufacturing folks and retail folks and, quite frankly, folks that sell to retailers that are in Oklahoma. They've got several questions that they've actually sent to me pretty quickly, so I want to be able to bounce a few of those.
Oklahoma Senator James Lankford is a member of the Senate Finance Committee, where they held a recent trade hearing with Jamison Greer, U.S. trade rep.
The goal of this is to do more trade internationally, that the United States would be able to manufacture here or produce here and sell more internationally, and that we would have that opportunity to have increased market access. Is that correct?
So, Senator, I think that's accurate, because when we're trying to get down a deficit and have more production here, necessarily right. Part of it is making sure we're not getting too many imports that are driven by unfair trade practices, but also promoting our exports overseas.
So then right now there's a lot of negotiations going on. There was a lot of questions for several days whether we're negotiating or not negotiating. I'm hearing from you pretty clearly today. We are open to negotiate. We're trying to be able to establish better trade agreements to be able to move forward. Do you have any timeline on certain countries or places that you have set internally to say we hope to have negotiations complete by this point? Obviously, negotiations can extend as long as they have to, but is there a timeline you're dealing with?
So the president has indicated that he's willing to negotiate with parties that want to pursue reciprocal trade with the United States. We don't have any particular timeline set on that because, as you pointed out, Senator, the outcome is more important than setting something artificially for us. What I can say is I'm moving as quickly as possible, and a lot of these countries are moving very quickly, and we're working on the weekends, we're working at night as folks want to engage on
Great.
This. Now, I will say, I know you want to ask something. the trade deficit has been decades in the making, and it's not going to be solved overnight.
Right. Right. Yeah. Everyone understands that well, and everyone that I talk to is grateful that we're actually attacking the trade deficit issue and try to be able to bring down barriers to trade. They also want to get a timeline.
Langford on a timeline, but then there's this issue of Vietnam.
Let me give you, for instance, I've got an Oklahoma company that several years ago spent millions of dollars to be able to move out of China. They moved into Vietnam for production because literally there was what they're producing. The parts were not created in America. So they were looking for other places to go. They spent all the money, spent all the time, shifted out of China, got to Vietnam and established there. Now they're saying we've got giant costs in Vietnam at this point. So they're going to have to renegotiate with every single retailer that they sell to, which is going to take a lot of time to be able to do it. What they're trying to be able to figure out is, do we hold on those negotiations and try to renegotiate with Walmart and Target and Costco and everybody else they're going to have to renegotiate with? Or do they press on with those negotiations now? If things are going to get resolved soon, they can pause. If they're not going to get resolved, they're going to have to renegotiate every contract again to try to figure out which way to go. So the time piece does matter to them.
Senator, I understand completely. And Vietnam is one of those countries that understands that it is, frankly, one of the major targets of this action because their trade surplus with us is so lopsided. I think it's every $15 they export to us, we send them, you know, $1, and they remain closed to our exports where we can be in competitive agriculture, et cetera. But they've come to the table with an offer, right? We didn't go out and say, please come talk to us. They beat down our door and they want to talk about
good.
It.
Good. I don't anticipate that we're ever going to have equal trade with Vietnam. We're a much larger economy than they are, but bringing down the trade barriers would be helpful so that they would accept American products to be sold there. I think that's beneficial, but most countries in the world are never going to buy as much as we're purchasing because we just purchase a lot more from there.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
For a period of time, I would say this morning, over the last few days, I've been thinking about it. I've been dealing with Scott, with Howard, with some other people that are very professional. And I think it probably came together early this morning.
President Donald Trump on pausing the tariffs.
Just wrote it up. I didn't. We didn't have the use of. We didn't have access to lawyers. Or we just wrote up. We wrote it up from our hearts, right? It was written from the heart, and I think it was well written too. But it was written from the heart. It was written as something that I think was very positive for the world and for us. And we don't want to hurt countries that don't need to be hurt, and they all want to negotiate. The only problem is, you know, you can only do so many at one time. It's like, we want to do it right. We want to get it right. We want to take care of them, but we have to take care of our country. So, but this was something certainly we've been talking about for a period of time, and we decided to pull the trigger. And we did it today, and we're happy about it. I didn't know it would have that kind of an impact, but it's, you know, I think we have the biggest increase in the history of the stock market. That's pretty good. That's pretty, you're almost, you know, if you keep going, you're going to be back to where it was 4 weeks ago. But it was a sick market 4 weeks ago, you know, because this trade was sick. It was only a question of time. I don't blame the tariffs. I think the tariffs just sort of magnified what was happening. It was sick. Biden allowed these people to get away with murder. Biden allowed China to just take advantage of us. We had like a $1 trillion deficit with China, $1 trillion deficit. So that was going to only be a matter of time. I think the tariffs brought it out faster and they magnified the problem. But I think this was a problem that existed far beyond tariffs. This was a systemic problem. And we're going to cure that problem. And maybe to a large extent we have because we've revealed it.
And the importance of reversing course.
What was happening to us on trade, not only with, you know, if you look at it, not only with China, but China was by far the biggest abuser in history, and others also, but somebody had to do it. They had to stop because it was not sustainable. Last year, China made $1 trillion off trade with the United States. That's not right. And now I've reversed it. It's for a short period of time, but we made $2 billion. We're making now $2 billion a day. And somebody had to do it. Roger actually said it. Charles Schwab was here a little while ago, one of the great financial people, and he said he's been waiting for 40 years for somebody to do what I did over the last month.
And if you didn't do it, you wouldn't have a country. It wouldn't be sustainable. So I'm honored to have done it. And, you know, look, nothing's over yet, but we have a tremendous amount of spirit from other countries, including China. China wants to make a deal. They just don't know how quite to go about it. You know, it's one of those things. They don't know quite. They're proud people. And President Xi's a proud man. I know him very well. And they don't know quite how to go about it, but they'll figure it out. They're in the process of figuring it out, but they want to make a deal. And we have other, we have many other countries, as you know, many more than 75. And they all want to come, and they want to come here, or they'll go to Commerce, or they'll go to Treasury. We have our great senators here and congressmen. They'll call John, they'll do somebody, they'll go through somebody, but they're all calling, how do we do this? They all want to make a deal. Somebody had to do what we did, and I did a 90-day pause for the people that didn't retaliate, because I told them, if you retaliate, we're going to double it. And that's what I did with China, because they did retaliate. So we'll see how it all works out. I think it's going to work out amazing. I think that our country is going to be at the end of a year or shorter, but I think we're going to have something that nobody would have dreamt possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today's hearing on the president's trade agenda begins with American retirement funds, investors, and our economy in purgatory thanks to Donald Trump's plan to hike tariffs to levels not seen since before the invention of the automobile.
Ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee from Oregon is Ron Wyden.
Prices are continuing to increase. Markets for made-in-the-USA products are slamming shut around the world. The U.S. economy has gone from the envy of the world to a laughingstock in less time than it took to finish March Madness. Through it all, Donald Trump and his advisors have yet to provide an understandable explanation. Any explanation for what his tax hike on the American people is supposed to accomplish. And so this morning, I'd like to focus on one central question. What is the plan? In the last week, the White House has been all over the map when it comes to this question. There is no clear message of how the tariffs were determined, what they're supposed to accomplish, how long they'll be in place, whether they're a negotiating tool or a move to try and cut the United States off from global trade and usher in a new era of 1870s-style protectionism. In the days since Donald Trump announced his tariffs, the president and his advisors have repeatedly changed their stories on all of these questions. Last Thursday, Donald Trump said, quote, the tariffs give us great power to negotiate. Just after Secretary Lutnick and a top economic advisor told reporters the tariffs were not up for negotiation. Then the stories changed again on Sunday when the Secretary of Agriculture and the top White House economic advisor, Kevin Hassett, both said Trump's tariffs were bringing foreign countries to the table, hoping to negotiate new deals to cut tariffs. At nearly the same time, the Treasury Secretary was on TV Sunday saying the tariffs would remain in place for, quote, days and weeks. Asked if the tariffs were up for negotiation, the Commerce Secretary said Sunday, the tariffs are coming. He announced it, and he wasn't kidding. The tariffs are coming. And yesterday in the Oval Office, Donald Trump said there can be permanent tariffs, and there can also be negotiations. So again, this morning, what we want to know is what is the plan? The stock market is up a bit this morning on yet another round of rumors that Donald Trump might not go through with his full barrage of tariffs. Yet this weekend, Donald Trump retweeted a post on Truth Social arguing that Trump is crashing our economy and markets on purpose as a strategy to lower interest rates. Is it possible that's the plan? Tank the economy so wealthy people can borrow money more cheaply? We know that billionaires like Howard Lutnick and semi-billionaires like Scott Bessent won't mind paying more for groceries or gas. It's a drop in the bucket for them. But for families, higher costs are going to get hurt. Higher costs are going to hurt. The nonpartisan Yale Budget Lab predicts the tariffs will cost families $3,800 in the first year alone. In Mr. Greer's confirmation hearing, he argued that economic security leads to strong national security. Our country is getting the opposite with these pointless tariffs. Destroying the foundations of our economy is not only disastrous for workers and families, it makes our people less safe.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
They face some really serious challenges. They've had 2 years of very severe drought. And you have to understand, you know, Chihuahua is a pretty arid country. It's think southern New Mexico, extend that farther south. And so, they only get about 16 inches of rain on average. But in fact, in the last 28 months, they've only had a little over 19 inches of rain in 28 months, over 2 years. So very, very dry. They've had to liquidate cattle.
Oklahoma State Extension livestock economist Darrell Peel.
All of the challenges of trying to hang on to them through their dry season. And then, of course, the appearance of New World screwworm last November closed the border. So now they're caught in a situation where they're trying to hang on to cattle that they were going to export until they can export them at the same time that they have no feed and they're feeding them with purchase feeds, which is extremely expensive.